this week on Unglossy. What is your like most important advice to those folks who are really trying to figure out a way to leverage these tools to make an income?
Like we talked about, one of the themes here is consistency. Consistency and persistence. Because there's going to be plenty of days when life can get in the way. You know, when you're not feeling on. And you still got to find a way when that camera goes on and you're creating content to bring that energy and to bring that presence.
From the top.
Yeah.
I'm Tom Frank.
I'm Mickey Fax.
And I'm Jeffrey Sledge.
Welcome to Unglossy, decoding brand and culture. I'm Tom Frank, partner and chief creative officer at Merit Creative. This is Mickey Fax, hip-hop artist and founder and CEO of Pendulum Inc. And that is Jeffrey Sledge, a seasoned music industry veteran who has worked with some of the biggest artists in the business. We're here to explore the moments of vulnerability, pivotal decisions, and creative sparks that fuel the relationship between brand and culture. Get ready for a thought-provoking journey into the heart and soul of branding, the unscripted, unfiltered, and truly unglossy truth. We got a big week here.
Yes, we do.
The podcast is going out. We got some amazing guests lined up in the coming weeks. We got Harry Merrick, who you guys are going to get to meet. He's the namesake of Merrick Creative and a maverick in the brand and marketing space. We got the infamous Isaac Hayes III, the founder of Fanbase, amongst his many accolades. Mm-hmm. And to kick things off, we got a very interesting guy. He is a pro soccer player turned musician with a gazillion YouTube followers who just love to hear him break down music in only the way he can. His name is Knox Hill, and I can't wait to share this conversation with the world.
Yep.
What'd you guys think?
I like Knox a lot. I mean, I thought he was the first time I met him, of course, but I liked his conversation. He was a smart guy, very welcoming. It wasn't like had a wall up, I'm smarter than you kind of thing.
Absolutely,
And I enjoyed his perspectives, and his story about how he got to this point, and he's still going up. Yeah, he's dope.
Yeah, I love Knox. Obviously, that was my contact. So me and him had already had some rapport, and the fact that, you know, he stroked my ego a little bit reviewing one of my songs, it only made things a little bit better. So the fact that, you know, he was talking his talk, and we got a chance to see and how he built his following up, and how he focused on the niche, right? Like, your own specific niche is what's going to help you be you. And I think for me, that was incredible. So I can't wait for people to hear this.
Absolutely.
With that, let's dive right in. Enjoy our conversation with Knox Hill. So I'm going to just start here. A, I'm a fan. I'm a fan of this guy. And B, the one thing I always have to do, and maybe I'm crazy, is I got to always start with like defining for myself who is Knox Hill, right? And so I will give you this, that my favorite description of who you are and where you're coming from and where you are right now is your own. And I'm going to read this to get us kicked off. It says, rap is merely the evolution of Knox Hill. I'm a contradiction in every sense of the word. Pro athlete turned musician, backpacker who misses home, introvert who needs a crowd to express himself. Welcome to the mind of a man torn by identity. At their center of it all is one consistent in his life, that the music that he loves. Welcome to my universe. I think that is an incredible description and a good way to start, because I want to know more about the brand of Knox Hill. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm so excited to be here today. And that was a really poetic way to put that. I know that was my own words, but basically to summarize is I'm just one big hypocrite, basically. Let's get that out of the way. So no, I really appreciate that intro. But yeah, I'm well today. I feel good. I'm busy as always. You guys can appreciate the grind of content in social media nowadays. It never ever stops. It is always a new challenge each and every day. But you gotta approach it with an open mind, fresh energy, and just keep rolling.
I noticed that online, you know, you have a lot of entries, but it's really not a detailed bios on you. It's kind of like, so is that done on purpose, where you kind of keeping, I mean, obviously not your personal life and your family and all that, but I just, why have you put it out that way, that it's not so easy to kind of find, like, even like where you're from, it just says Maryland most of the places. It doesn't kind of say like I'm from so and so town or whatever. Like, you know, why have you done it that way to keep it kind of
mysterious? Is that on purpose?
Yes. Yeah. I've always like, well, I mean, to pinpoint more directly, you know, I'm from PG County, essentially. I'm from all over the county. So, you know, PG County is a huge hip hop area. You know, we've given the world the Wale's. We've given the world the Cordae's. Not too far down the road, you got the King Los's. You know, you got a lot of rich hip hop.
Knox, I'm sitting in PG County right
Logic,
now, by the way.
Of course.
I am in PG County right now. I am in Greenbelt, Maryland, shooting from our
what
studio
the fuck?
Right now. I am.
You were Greenbelt?
Yes.
I could have come down to San
Diego.
I had no idea.
You were still here.
No
I
idea.
Just assumed you were out in LA or
that
something.
That is wild. That is wild. So, yeah. So, you know, wow. In terms of my story, like, I like there not being too much out there of me. Like, I've always said this. I know it's, again, me. I think the theme is there's a little bit of a hypocrite inside of me. I'm full of contradictions, but I want to build the brand. I want to get to a point where obviously I'm providing for my family. I'm making a living, but the end game for me has never been to be famous. I've never wanted to have like a level of celebrity where I have to worry about going out of the house and I just can't be normal at the end of the day, which is ironic because we continue to grow and we continue to expand. But, you know, I'm suppressing it for as long as possible, I guess. I'm sure more information will get out about me personally, but I do kind of like it that way. I like having that intrigue. I kind of like having that separation of this is my home life. This shit keeps me grounded. You know, when I'm a dad, when I'm with my family, when I'm doing all that stuff versus when I'm out, you know, doing shows, doing interviews, making content, doing the YouTube grind and doing all that. So it just helps me to stay balanced and not to let all this become overwhelming. So I guess some people might look at it externally and go like I'm defending from external things, but really it's more for my own mental health and my own sanity, I guess, keeping it that way. And at the end of the day, too, listen, I came up, Mickey can appreciate this. I came up as in battle rap, in hip hop. So I like that there's not that much information out there on me. If somebody wants to, you know, start loading up diss tracks and coming after me. Yeah, I like that. That's always been an advantage so far in the disses that I've thrown back.
Sorry
and forth,
about the
so.
Commanders, by the way, man.
Wow.
We all struggle with that.
I'll tell you what, man. I mean, look, man, we got rid of Snyder, and I just thought, hey, things are moving up. And then all of a sudden, I mean, we all saw the playoff game. I mean, and then, hey, let's go hire Dan Quinn. That seems like a great decision. So,
hey,
it hurts. It hurts, man. My whole lifetime, we've not been good.
Don't
really,
give up on the Dan Quinn thing yet. I was very down on it at first, but I kind of like it. Uh-huh. The more I think about it, the more I like it. So let's give it a little chance. Yeah. I think that he might be okay.
Well, we're obviously setting up for Caleb Williams, aren't we?
And he's,
you know, in terms of our OC hire. I mean, Kingsbury's coming in.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but another PG County guy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you think about the talent that has come out of PG, man. There it is. But it hurts being a Commanders fan. I mean, hell, it hurts just being a Washington sports fan. I think in general, you know this. You can appreciate it. Besides what? Hockey and
we
the
had
Capitals,
the Nats
that's all
for,
we get.
For like, a while there. It's yeah.
We did. Yeah.
The Wizards weren't the
Wizards have
the Wizards,
never
no?
been good.
Wizard ever since
yeah,
they changed
never
names,
change their name.
They've not been good. I mean, hell, the Bullets weren't even that good. I mean, I remember going back as a kid to like the George Mirasson days and going to the games, you know, right there. Because they were playing MPG for a while.
Mirasson, yeah. Wow.
And then they moved back into DC.
So tell us a little bit about when did you first fall in love with hip hop? You know what I'm saying? Like, when did you kind of get your buzz to start battle rapping and all that shit? Like you said, I know PG County's always been a hip hop hotbed. You can say Wale and even guys like Peter Rosenberg from the radio. Like, it's always been a thing down there. KYS and, you know, PGC and everything. So, what kind of sparked?
IDK as well.
Yeah, why,
so much
what sparked
talent.
Your interest to kind of get into it?
I think. You know, what's really funny with me is that I've always been a creative mind. So, you know, I've written poetry, I've written all types of music and songs. But, you know, when you're surrounded by rap all the time and, you know, you come up, you go to school and that's all everybody talks about. That's all everybody listens to and plays. You know, it starts to affect you. And for me, what I found really appealing about rap is that you can just say so much more. You know, you can just get so many more syllables out and you can be so much more direct with your writing. You don't have to be as abstract and symbolic as other genres. So that was super appealing to me from a lyricist and a writing perspective. I'm like, holy shit, like the things you can talk about and just go so direct on, it's so much more raw. It's so much more pure to me. And in terms of like coming up, like I came up really, you know, obviously 8 Mile took off and that was a huge movie thing, right? So like the kids at school, they used to fucking call me like white chocolate, right? Every day, like going to basketball games, we'd be on the school bus and we would battle on the way to the games. We'd be in the locker room like battling. And then like after school, like someone would like throw a hat down and everybody put some money in the hat. And then you just like go around freestyling and basically the person who was the nicest would just kind of take the hat and the money and walk away from it at the end of the day.
So, wow.
That's just a little bit of the, you know, the roots that raised me, really.
Well, I want to step in and, you know, for me, I discovered you during my short feud with Royce da 5'9", right? And I want to say that I'm a fan of YouTube reactors, but I'm a fan of YouTube reactors with trailers, like movie trailers, specifically MCU trailers. And I didn't realize that there was this huge community of YouTubers that were reacting not only to music, but also obviously diss records. Mm. And they have a community of people across their own platforms, such as yourself, Stevie Knight.
Shout out Stevie.
And there's a couple of other guys. And, you know, I took it upon myself, you know, No Jumper and, you know, all of these guys, right? And I took it upon myself to dive deep into this world. How did you get into this world, right? And what, when you, once you got into this world, how did you find your niche to gain and amass such a following? Big following. YouTube?
That's a great question, Mickey. So you got to remember, like, I've been on YouTube for a long time. I've been an artist for a long time. I guess the thing is, I was lucky enough because I also had another talent. You know, I was a soccer player. Mm. So that opened a lot of doors for me. You know, I've always said that sports and music is what really kept me out of trouble and kept me on, you know, gave me so many opportunities in life. So my plan, I guess, if we can really make plans in life, was always put everything into the sport route first because my body's only going to last so long. You know, it's going to break down over time, right? Music to me is always timeless. It's always something you could do. And it was funny, even when I was on contract in places, I wouldn't even tell them about the music side because certain teams, they want to control your image. They want to control everything you do in terms of press and everything. And like coming up like that in the soccer world, I didn't want them necessarily controlling
where all the music did you play side
of things. So like,
where all did you play professionally?
I played semi-pro in, there's a team down in Northern Virginia that I played with coming up. So I played with them. I spent time with the Richmond Kickers. I spent time up in Canada. I spent time in Toronto playing. I spent time in Malta, of all places, playing. I spent time in Barcelona. And then I ultimately ended up in England and spent time over there playing. And that's where I met my wife. So yeah, I've been around the block. But like I've always stayed consistent on the music side. So I'm kind of going around the houses here, but I kept going with the YouTube side. Like it was sort of like I wasn't doing it full time, but I was still putting out content and I was learning and I was teaching myself along the way. I'm someone that learns best just by doing it, you know, just like diving into it. So I just started making videos and then you learn how to edit those videos. You start watching tutorials and you start learning more about, you know, chopping audio and getting things right. Then you start learning about lighting. You start learning about cameras and things like that. So I spent a lot of time, I guess, while playing, kind of learning the skills that I would need and use nowadays to really grow and take off. And then, you know, once it came time to start doing this more full time and to start putting more energy into this, I was kind of ready to go on the back end with the skill set, if that makes sense. So going back to the reactions, like how I got started with that, I think I've always been analytical with the music. Right. I've always listened to some of the greats and you start thinking about the rhyme schemes, you start thinking about the flow patterns, you start looking at the wordplay, and it's just something I just naturally did in my mind. I mean, that's how I learned and improved as an MC. So it was like, maybe I can take these things and translate them over to doing reactions. And when I started looking at reaction videos, because it just like randomly popped up, it was one of those things. I think it was the Eminem MGK diss tracks, right? Mm-hmm. And that's how I got introduced to reactors, Mickey. It was like, all of a sudden, you see these people breaking down these diss tracks. You're like, what is this community? What is going on here? And then I started, you know, doing more research and looking at it. And I was like, Well, there's a lot of people that do short videos. Like they sit there and they make faces and they like jump out of their chair and they bring excitement and energy.
Right.
But I don't see as many people doing like long form breakdowns, like really chopping it up and explaining things. So I kind of identified a niche in that market, I thought. I'm like, I wonder if there's going to be people who would appreciate long form breakdowns of stuff and like sort of deep dive analytics. And that's what I started doing. And at first, like the comments, like half of the comments are like, this guy pauses too much, blah, blah, blah.
Always
like this
the
is
negative.
Too long. This is fucking boring. Absolutely. But I believed in it because on the other half of it, there were people that were really engaged and there were so many positive comments too. So it was like, all right, let's focus on the positives because that's social media at the end of the day, isn't it? The more you grow, absolutely, the more negativity you're going to get. Can't listen to that. Focus on the community that you do have and just start growing that. And I think because each and every video, I just focus on quality, right? I just wanted to make it like the best breakdown I possibly could. Do as much justice to that artist as possible. And hopefully someone watching will walk away just thinking something differently that they didn't have before they walked into it. Wow. So that's always the formula. It wasn't like, do this and let's keep growing and let's blow up and this is how we're going to get to 100K and 500K. For me, it was about the content. It was about the content. I believe that if you just build it the right way and made the right content, eventually the right people would start sharing it and they'd start coming through the door.
Wow.
How long did it take to kind of catch traction from when you first started?
I was pretty surprised. Like once I started doing the breakdowns in that first year, we jumped probably because the YouTube before that was maybe like 15K to 20K already, which is solid because I did that just doing music, stuff. Started doing the reactions and the breakdowns. And within that first year, we jumped up to 100K within that first year. And then things have just, you know, there's been times when it's like a grind. Maybe you see like 15 to 20K subs a month. And then there's other times when just things really hit right and there's a lot quicker growth. And obviously, we've just been steadily climbing and climbing and climbing. And now I think we're at like a million something subscribers, which is incredible. I mean, unfathomable when I first got started.
What is the key then? Is it the consistency? Is it the consistency of quality, I guess, maybe is a better way to say that. Or what have you done to continue to do this? I mean, it's been a couple years now, right? Or what's the longevity?
Yeah, I think one, like you touched on, is the consistency of quality. And I think that's one of the things where, you know, because reaction channels, most people don't just watch one. They'll go consume multiple reactors. And it's a very oversaturated market, like many markets are nowadays. So it's how do you stand out? So for me, you know, you come over to me, the audio's crisp, the video looks good, the lighting's right, the quality is there. And I've done this enough now where I've definitely gotten better with my breakdowns. Like I know when I pause, how to like get my thoughts out there quickly, like give very analytical, good thoughts, get it out within a 30-second to 1-minute window, then get back to listening some more and then pause and really get it out there and learn how to be efficient, entertaining, but educate at the same time. And for me, it's finding that sweet spot between educating minds and entertaining them too.
Wow. That's incredible. Now, Let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. Has Eminem seen any of your videos?
That's a great question. I mean, obviously you've seen my videos. Yes. I know Royce has seen my videos. Royce has talked about me before.
Right.
I've been on a track with King Crooked. Crooked has seen my videos. I know that Joel Ortiz has seen my videos, right? I just did an interview with Cassius. He's seen my... So there's so many people that have been linked to Shady at some point or around it that have seen the videos, and I have millions of views on Eminem videos. Right. I would like to think that he's seen one of my videos.
Right.
I can't confirm or deny it, but I think there's a good chance that he's come across it at some point now.
Now, one more question. Now, in terms of YouTube, right? Like you have a million subscribers on YouTube. Have you seen the success over various platforms? Like, are your videos or is your social media following as big on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram as it is on YouTube, or is it just a YouTube thing?
Definitely not. I think it's growing steadily on other platforms, but I think if you look at it, for instance, I think No Life Shaq is a great example. You know, he's a reactor with 4 million subscribers, but he also started years before me. And he got in just before, you know, lockdowns and COVID and all of that. And you saw there was a greater translation of when you grow on one platform, it translates quickly to the other social media platforms. I think now social media has advanced so much more and people just, you know, subscribe so many places. They follow so many things. They've been oversaturated on social media. So I think it's harder to achieve that just direct synergy of, you know, equaling the numbers as you grow. I mean, you still grow, but it definitely filters down.
But wouldn't...
I would say. Because, you know, even on YouTube, like, sorry, I'll just get this all out real quick. So even on YouTube, I have 1 million subscribers. But like any social media, I know I'm not getting served 1 million subscribers with my posts. According to subscriptions and notifications, you're maybe hitting 5% of that market, 10% of that market with each and every video. And it's the same on other platforms too. If I could hit 100% of that market, I could convert a lot more people sideways across social media, but you can't. It's weird. If you really want to hit like 1 million subscribers, truly, I got to get to like 10 million subscribers. You know, it's a game of you constantly have to get bigger and bigger just to try to get to where you think you are.
But do you even really care about the other platforms? I mean, the content that you're making is for YouTube. I mean, YouTube fits it perfectly. Like how are you even using the other channels? I mean, does it matter or are you using those for, I guess, promotion back to YouTube ultimately?
Ultimately, everything feeds back to YouTube, really. I've just seen it as a bonus. Like, I've dedicated my time to cultivating my YouTube platform. I'm sure, like, if I sat down tomorrow and went, right, the next 3 months, I'm going to bump Instagram up and do the same type of content, but make it so it fits Instagram Reels and fits Instagram content, I could. But it's just, you know, where are you going to value your time right now? And I only have so much time. I'm a father too. I got a family to raise. That's important to me. And like we talked about, remember, what's my end game? I don't concern myself as much of, I really want to blow up and be this big celebrity. I just want to make a living off of doing what I love and have a passion for it.
So in terms of that making a living though, and this is more for like our audience, how did you convert that into, I mean, I'm assuming you make good money off of YouTube. And how, what was that process like? And how is that happening? Like for people who really don't understand, they all hear, oh, these YouTubers make all this money, but how are you actually doing it?
I mean, compared to someone in a different genre of YouTube, I don't make as much in terms of someone who has the same amount of subscribers as me, who does like maybe makeup tutorials or movie reviews or something, because the nature of music reactions is, we have the labels to contend with. So even though I make transformative content, and this is you know, a legal area that is still going to be discussed and will probably end up in courts one day, technically, a lot of the time, I'm always fighting labels over copyright and monetization rights. So that limits what I make. So I have to find, I have to find other ways to therefore convert my audience. And I think my audience is at a point where they understand that. They get the game. So like twice a month, I'll do a live stream and I do well on live stream donations. I have a Patreon. I've spent time, one other platform I've spent cultivating is the Patreon. So that's always important to me. And that's like, you know, you have your different circles, I guess, and layers of fans. And you know, the people that are willing to go off of one platform onto another platform, donate financially to you. Those are the people that you really need to hold on to.
Yeah.
That's the community to cultivate right there. So that's always been big for me, is cultivating and growing that Patreon audience. And then obviously on the YouTube side, we get Google ad revenue. So, you know, every 1,000 views, you get such a CPM for it in terms of Google ads that are served and you get a percentage.
Okay, so let me ask a technical question because you brought this up. Is you are putting music on, correct, that is in essence from a label, from copyrighted. I mean, I can remember even just when we would put some of our shows up, we would even use Lupe and Royce's actual music and we would get dinged even though they were in the actual show. So how do you get how does that play a role, or is that what you're getting at, that you can't monetize in the same way because of that?
That's what I'm getting at, is you can't really monetize, and you can fight it, but unfortunately the way the YouTube copyright system is set up is that it favors whoever is serving the copyright ID. So basically, I can contest it. Let's say I react to something from Eminem and UMG serves me a copyright ID, right? So I can contest it, But guess who decides that first level of contesting it, whether it's going to stand or not? It's not YouTube. Mm. It's not a third party. It is the party that served me with the copyright ID and claim. So, you know, almost 10 times out of 10, they're just going to bat it back. And then I have an option after that where I can escalate it. But the issue that a lot of YouTubers don't take when escalating is because you make yourself vulnerable to then receive a copyright strike if they want to bat it back one more time. And if you get a copyright strike, then you can't monetize your channel. Then you're in trouble. Three copyright strikes,
three strikes,
and you're out of here. Yeah. So, yeah. So a lot of labels know that they can take it to that level because I'm just an individual at the end of the day. I don't have the big budget of lawyers and people to fight this legally. But ultimately, if you do want to fight it, it is fair use, and they do understand that. And in the rare instances when I have had copyright strikes and I had to fight for my life, basically, and get to the point where they have to show that they're taking me to court, they're not going to do it because it's not worth it.
It's a headache.
Because it is transformative content.
It costs more to take you to court than the actual, you know, whatever would happen.
Yeah. So for me, like, you kind of know, like, let's say in a given week, I'm doing a few label artists. I know I'm not monetizing most of that. Sometimes there are certain tracks you know that you can monetize and get away with. So you have to find other things to balance it. Whether I just talk about a news point for the day, something happening within hip hop, that's a great chance to do it. My own music makes me money, or independent artists. Like, I try to develop relationships with other independent artists because they let me monetize. So it's finding ways to kind of balance and grow that way.
So you say independent artists let you monetize?
A lot of them do, yes.
Could you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So, like, let's say I react to an independent artist like a Dax in the world. Actually, I know he's got the distribution with Columbia, but like a Dax or let's say Token's another example of independent artists. Harry Mack, for instance, those type of guys, you know, you can reach out to them and go, hey, can you just clear this? And like a lot of times, a lot of these guys will just put me in touch with whoever their publisher is, whoever is in charge of it, and they'll just try to get me whitelisted so that I can monetize it, so that I can make money off of it. Because I think what they appreciate, and I think what you guys recognize too, is, you know, we're kind of like reactors definitely have an influence to move needle in music appreciation now. We're almost like the new age of DJs, in a sense, putting people onto new music and new artists and new people to listen to and enjoy.
Very much.
So I wish that labels would more so recognize the relationships that we could have, because I don't mind working with labels to help promote artists and build that. I think there's a lot of room to grow there and to continue expanding in those lanes.
It's kind of like when LimeWire was out or when Napster first came out, and labels' first reaction is always trying to kill some type of new technology instead of embracing it and seeing how they could use it to their advantage. They just try to wipe it out. And I kind of look at it like that with the reaction. Because everybody, I mean, reaction videos like Shaq is a big one. You know, there's some others too that are like, you know, even a couple young kids over in London, what's his name? Dan and Kaz, they do stuff like they move the needle, like you said, when you guys react to something, and you have these followers, you have, like you say, 1.1, even 10% of that is like 100,000 kids or whoever are going to watch and see what you say and react to it by streaming it or downloading it or whatever the situation is. It's kind of a trip that the labels are still fighting it. The music's on YouTube anyway, you know what I mean? So, like, what are you fighting?
Yeah.
You know, you just have, it's like you're a marketing arm or a promotion arm, or like you said, a radio arm that they're not utilizing properly. It's interesting.
It's actually kind of crazy that they're not utilizing you. The more I think about this now, you 100% are that DJ. Like, you should, if any of these labels are listening, you should be calling this guy and helping him promote your music.
And the thing is, too, is like, I've said this before, in terms of my channel and what I do, I'm not here to be a music critic. I'm not here to be like an Anthony Fantano, who's another YouTuber, you know, who's known for, people want to see, is he going to like poo-poo on an album, or is he going to, you know, give it its flowers? How's he going to do? Like, that's not my job. I've never viewed it that way. My job is to, because I'm an artist myself, and I appreciate how hard it is to be an artist. You know, you can give me any genre, you could give me any track, and I can find something I like to talk about. You know, whether it's something unique in the production, something unique in the lyrical writing, something unique in the delivery, the intonation, the flow, you know, what's going on. You can always find things to talk about and to break down, I feel like. So my job, I've always seen it as helping people to just appreciate the music more, appreciate their artists more, and just create that greater connection between fan and the artist. And I get so many comments all the time of people who are like, man, like, I heard this song 1,000 times. I never thought about it in this way. Now, watching your breakdown, like, I just hear it so differently. Like, thank you for that.
And I have appreciated that when I went through a lot of your videos, that you didn't break down just hip hop. You did get into some other genres too, which I kind of, and it, to me, that showed that it wasn't just about being critical of the music, but it was really breaking down the words, the different components of it. It was much, that's what I actually really appreciated about it.
Thank you. I feel like you can learn. You know, just because I'm a rapper and just because I'm a hip hop head doesn't mean I can't learn from other genres. There's always things that you can learn that another genre is doing or pushing the boundaries in, you know, whether it's metal or rock or even pop, you can learn things. Some of the producers of pop music are amazing producers. And if you're just listening from that side of things, you can pick up so much of maybe where certain waves and certain things are going.
Dr. Luke is one of them.
Luke is crazy because Luke is one of those dudes that can literally do anything. And has, like, he's done rap shit. He's done, you know, R&B stuff, obviously pop stuff. He kind of can do whatever, you know, and sound, his sound is different, like, per whoever he's working with. Like, Doja doesn't sound like Kesha, you know what I mean? But he kind of can do both. He's Lucas Fire. Lucas Fire. Who you digging right now? Who you like this out?
I love the song making and the production of Doja. Really do. Honestly, like that's so far. I love that. A lot of independent artists that I like. Y'all ever heard of Billy Woods? Hip hop dude.
I've heard of Billy.
Billy has a very abstract way of writing. It's kind of like an Aesop Rock, but maybe a little bit more palatable for more of a mainstream audience, I guess, because he's not as abstract and super symbolic with his writing, but he still dives into that world. He's pretty dope. This dude, Mickey Fax, he's all right. Cool. Like, you know,
I want to hear more about your breakdown of your breakdown of Mickey. Like, I want to hear a little bit more about that.
Honestly, Mickey, I will say, and this isn't just because I'm on here with you. Like, if anybody asks me this, like, that is one of the best diss tracks that I've heard in the past decade. Yeah. No cap. It really is. It really is. Like, I think. You just broke down so many levels to that, and it just was bar after bar after bar, triples, quadruples, quintuples going on. It was crazy, and the angles that you took and the way that you approached it. I mean, you even broke down what he did. Like, I love how you talked about, like, you know, Royce's use of pop culture references to, like, really over-accentuate and fatten bars that maybe aren't as deep as most people think, but since we have such a shallow world, it's like, oh yeah, that's super deep. That's you know, on a different level. I don't know, man. I really enjoyed that diss track from Mickey.
So
I will say that.
So what I will say is this: after the record came out, I was like, well, I just want to check the comments on my YouTube page, and I saw that I was getting a lot of views, and then the recommended videos started happening, and then I saw hundreds of these videos, and yours was like, you and Stevie was at the top, and I watched Knox's breakdown, and I was like, yo, he's getting everything. I was like, it's like he was with
so
me
he actually got it. This pretty darn that's right incredible. To what you were thinking.
He was at like 90, I would say 99.5%. Wow. He missed like two things.
Wow.
He missed like two things.
Woo.
And I layered it a lot. And he caught everything. So much so I had the comment on his page, like, I cannot believe you got everything.
Because, thank you, man.
And I watched
that really cool. Means a hell of a lot.
I watched everybody's reaction. And he was the one that got everything. Everybody didn't get everything. He got pretty much everything. He missed like two things, but he pretty much got everything. And after that, I became a fan of his channel. I just started watching all of his videos because he was able to decisively break down every single literary device, every technique that somebody did, their cadences, their flows. He basically, you know, was this guy. He could be a professor at Pendulum because the fact that he understands everything, right? The only thing that he really doesn't know is like the our terminologies, right? Yeah. It's the mere thought that he's like catching this. He's catching this. He's catching. He was catching it all. I was like, wow, Knox is that guy. Exactly.
Thank you, man. That's highest of compliments. And what I will say in terms of, you know, my videos, so a lot of reactors will probably push out content like 3 or 4 videos in a day. But because of the nature of what I do, I normally only do like 1 video in a day. And that's because mentally, it is so draining.
It is draining.
Especially when you get a high level lyricist like Mickey doing it, because there's so much to talk about and break down, and I want to do it justice. You know, I treat every video like that's going to be my last video. So I want to make sure that I'm mentally at my peak, performing at my best with that video. You know, it's almost like, I guess I can tie it back to the sports thing. You know, like if I know I'm doing a high level lyricist the next day, I'm not drinking that night, you know, I'm actually getting a good night's sleep. I'm taking care of my body. I probably go to the gym in the morning to like wake myself up, get myself ready to go. And then, you know, it's like taking care of myself mentally and physically so that I can be a high level performer when it comes to doing my videos and doing my breakdowns.
Dope.
And I have to be because there's too many really good MCs out there.
I'm impressed you do 1 a day. How are these people doing 2 or 3 a day? That's crazy.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a difference. Again, you got to remember, I'm making like 1 20-minute video, and they might be doing like 3 or 4, five, six, seven-minute videos, and they're not pausing as much as me. They're not talking as much as me. Like, you know, I'm sat there trying to, my brain's trying to be like a high-functioning CPU at the end of the day. I got to hear these bars. I got to break them down. I got to find as many layers and meanings as I can. And then also I got to think of a way to spin it to the public so that they can understand it, so that I can word it and phrase it in ways that they get, that they can connect with, and try to, you know, every once in a while, maybe crack a joke or do something entertaining at the same time, and then keep it going and just keep doing it and keep doing it and keep engaging and keep engaging. The hamster wheel is constantly turning.
What are your thoughts on battle rap world? I mean, it's do you keep in touch with that world?
Not as much as I would like to. You know, what's funny though, what I will say is, I just actually dropped a diss track, and I had a thing that blew up with Benzino.
I saw that. I was going to get to
situation.
That.
And what's wow. you know what I listened to before I went and wrote that diss? I listened to the King Los Daylight battle. Right, I had that on at the gym. And I was just looping that to just like get inspired. Like Daylight is actually one of my go-tos when it's like I really want to get into a deep pen mode and get ready to go. King Los too, man. Gotta shout them both out. But yeah, I was spinning that battle that day to kind of get ready and to walk into things.
That's dope.
That's good stuff.
That's dope.
You know, it's just, again, there's only so much time in a day. And I would love to find a way to take my platform and utilize it to do more for the battle rap scene. Cause I think we're at a point now where, you know, I do feel a responsibility with my platform in hip hop. And as someone that came up battling, it does weigh on my mind. It's almost like I feel guilty sometimes because I feel like I'm not doing enough personally to push it on my platform and to do more for it.
Tell us more about your goals for the Knox Hill brand.
I think that's a great question. You know what's interesting, and I guess something that I'm still figuring out is, because there's me as a breakdown artist and as a reactor, right? And there's, I guess, this aspect of my personality and this aspect of the brand and how I present myself. And then, you know, as obviously Mickey can attest, because he's doing podcasts and he's doing multiple things, there's being an artist. And that's different in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And that's a different part of, you know, it's a part of you, but it's not the same part of you that's over here doing like interviews and podcasts and reactions and that side of things, you know? So it's, I guess one thing I'm still figuring out and I'm wading through the waters of is there something that I want the brand to be united across all things, or do I want to start diverging more? Like the artist is really something different brand wise than what the reaction channel is and what that platform is. And I'm still kind of figuring that out, I guess.
Okay.
And I guess the next step of that too would be, if you ever want to go, I'll call it mainstream. I don't know if I mean mainstream though, and get it more integrated with larger brands that play more a significant role in terms of monetization, in terms of sponsorship, in terms of, I don't know, where does the breakdown, your passion is obviously hip hop and music, but does that bleed into something else that could create more revenue opportunities?
Yeah. I mean, I think, for instance, I just did I just dropped the Cassius interview today, which was really dope. And I found I did a Ren interview. He's an independent artist. He hit number one in the UK. He's absolutely blowing up. But I've kind of found a lane for doing interviews as well. And I think that there's so much more room for the brand to grow outside of just an artist, just a reactor, just really creating this sort of quality original content around music, whether that's, you know, interviews, whether that's speaking on issues, whether that's even talking music theory and things like that. I just think there's so much other ways to expand, because reactions are great. Reactions will get me so far, but that's still in the grand scheme of things. If you look at the entertainment industry, you look at music in general, it's still a niche. Reaction channels. You know, there's still a large portion of music listeners who don't know anything about reactions, and they don't follow reactions. So I guess ultimately, in terms of where I want to take the brand, is how do we continue to grow in this sphere, but how do we expand it to other spheres? And how do we create content that engages these other spheres of people out there?
Mickey, this is a new course for you right here at Pendulum Inc.
I mean, I think this guy, Knox, I mean, he could teach this stuff. Because he understands it, and he's, you know, obviously he's providing this knowledge to his fan base so that they can kind of have the same thought process when they listen to music as he does. So I think that he's found his niche and he just hammers it home. And I think that's something that everybody that's watching needs to really kind of take note on. He started at 10,000 subscribers and he just kept doing it and then refining it and then adding more pieces to the puzzle in order to get to 1 million subscribers, right? Like, I've never had 1 million subscribers or followers on anything. I went viral a couple times, but I've never had that many followers, and he was just consistent with it, and he's able to be successful off of it. I think that's the biggest takeaway that I get from this particular.
So let me ask you this. I got two more questions.
I want to know your advice.
I mean, there are a lot of people that are content creators, whether that's on YouTube, whether that's on Instagram, you know, wherever that is. What is your like most important advice to those folks who are really trying to figure out a way to leverage these tools to make an income?
Like we talked about, one of the themes here is consistency. Consistency and persistence, because there's going to be plenty of days when life can get in the way, you know, when you're not feeling on, and you still got to find a way when that camera goes on and you're creating content to bring that energy and to bring that presence. So you have to find a way to develop working habits that just become instinctual, I think, in terms of that content creation. And then two, it's really identifying a field or identifying an area that you yourself are passionate about. Because I think if you're not passionate in today's social media world and you're just doing it because, like, here's the end game, I just want to get famous or I want to get 1 million subscribers and I want to do this, you're probably not going to get there. You're probably not going to get there. I don't know, unless you want to go maybe kiss your brother or diss a ton of people or, you know, try to do like super clickbait things, but that's only fleeting. You know, that's not going to create a loyal fan base and community that's going to stick around. So really identify something that you are passionate about that you love. You know, you have to find that. And I think that love and that passion will come through in your content. It will come through into your brand and in your creation. And then just, you know, identify your values and stand by those values. And the right people who want to support those values and want to support what you stand for, they'll find you eventually. You know, don't, especially when you first get started, don't just sit there, read all the comments and listen to all the critique that everybody gives you. Because at the end of the day, they're not doing it. Most people don't know what they're talking about. And what's funny is that a lot of the people who watch, who are really watching, aren't even commenting and engaging. Right. You know, like it's like the loudest kid in the room is the one that gets noticed, but only like 5% to 10% of the audience is actually commenting. Most people is the silent majority that just sit there and they sit back and they watch and they consume. I mean, I barely leave comments on videos. I watch it, I click, I go on to the next one, you know? So for me, it's all about identifying your values, staying true to them, nurturing that sense of community, and then just, you know, trying to create quality content that you can find a way to put out consistently and efficiently is always going to do well in the long run, you know, on the social media game.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah. All right, we're going to end with this. Ultimately, our goal, right?
Go for it.
Is to connect brands with content. So what brand needs to take notice of Knox Hill?
Red Bull.
And why is that? Why is that?
Red Bull. Because they are some marketing geniuses. They are. I love what they have done with. At the end of the day, it's an energy drink. But Red Bull means so much more to people. And some of the initiatives that they've done, whether it's in gaming, whether it's in music, in extreme sports. I mean, they have taken a brand of an energy drink and they have built it into something so much more across all types of medias and platforms.
This is true.
That's kind of like what I'm trying to do, I guess, on a certain level. You know, you talk about the brand and where we want to go and what we want to do.
Yeah. Okay.
Shout out to Red Bull.
Word. Shout out to Red Bull.
Shout out to Red Bull.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Hey, no, listen. Gentlemen, the pleasure is mine. Thank you so much for your valuable time. And thanks for just kicking it with me a little bit.
For sure.
No, thank you. I'm going to remember consistency, persistence.
Thank you, guys.
With Knox Hill. That was Knox Hill. And if you take one thing away, as a musician, as a YouTuber, as a brand manager, as a marketer, anything you do, consistency and perseverance of your craft will always set you up for success. That's what I got away. That's what I took away from it.
I mean, I completely agree. I mean, I took the same thing away, mainly because you see the results from what he's done with consistency and perseverance. I mean, he saw the market. He saw where he couldn't be in a space where it's oversaturation. And he was like, you know what? I'm going to create my own thing. And I don't care if it's long form. People are going to have to get with it or not get with it. And luckily, they got with it. So salute to Knox Hill. Can't wait to have our interview, brother. Yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed that, man.
I also appreciated the fact that he, you know, he stressed that he's a family man. He's got, you know, he's got his wife and he's got his children, and how he, you know, does all this for his family, not for himself, even just kind of building for his family and his family's legacy. I like Knox a lot.
And he was just up the street from me.
Crazy.
DMV.
Knox, we're going to go grab a beer, a dinner, a something. We're doing it. We're doing it. It's going to be fun. All right, folks. That's our show.
Tune in to Unglossy, Decoding Brand and Culture on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. And follow us on Instagram at UnglossyPod to join the conversation.
Until next time, I'm Tom Frank.
I'm Jeffrey Sledge.
Smicky.
That was good.